And I know it's gonna be a lovely day. Good morning, Houston. Welcome to Amplified Houston on 90.1 KPFT Pacifica Radio in Houston, Texas. 89.5 FM in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville, and streaming online at kpft.org. Amplified Houston is a collaboration of five nonprofit organizations: Baker Ripley, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Houston, Children at Risk, the Women's Home, and the Houston Food Bank, and Houston's community radio station, KPFT Pacifica Radio. Listeners, all the programs you hear on KPFT are listener-supported. Become a sustaining member today by calling 713-526-5738 and pressing option 1. I am your host, Anna Coffey. I also have the pride and privilege of serving as the CEO of the Women's Home, and this is Amplified Houston, the Women's Edition, where we talk to women doing hard things. In today's show, we're going to speak with Dr. Jill Ann Jarrell, Associate Professor of Pediatrics, Division of Palliative Care with Texas Children's Hospital, Baylor, and Baylor College of Medicine. But first, I want to let you know that Amplified Houston is supported in part by The Cottage Shop, a thrift store located at 811 Westheimer in Houston, which is owned and operated by the Women's Home, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. All proceeds from The Cottage Shop pay for programs that help women reclaim their lives. Further information can be found at thewomenshome.org/cottageshop. All right, let's get to the show. Dr. Jarrell, thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to interview you today.
Thanks so much, Anna. It's my pleasure.
Great. Well, let's get started. Can you please share with your listeners your role at Texas Children's and Baylor College of Medicine?
Sure. Happy to do so. Well, you nailed my title. I'm an associate professor of pediatrics here at Texas Children's and Baylor, where I work in the Division of Palliative Care. And in this role, I see patients, children, young adults, adolescents, and grown adults who have serious medical illnesses. I also oversee our division's research initiatives, and I am our outpatient medical director.
That's a lot of hats, Dr. Jarrell. Wow, you must be a busy person. Okay, well, can you tell us about palliative care? Because I think people know the term, but maybe don't actually know what it is and what palliative care does and how it works with other facets of the care system.
Absolutely. Palliative care is a medical, subspecialty that delivers patient and family-centered care alongside other teams, other subspecialties, other primary care services that's really focused on the patient and family and highlighting their values, their goals, and making sure those things kind of come to fruition in their care plan. We have expertise in things like pain and symptom management, having difficult medical conversations to help elucidate goals of care for patients and families. We do something called advanced care planning, which the listeners might have heard of. We help patients and families make tough decisions related to their medical care and help understand what to expect and plan for the future. We do a lot of support, psychosocial support, helping patients and families cope through serious illness. We do end-of-life care. It's certainly not all of what we do, but it is a part of what we do, is take care of patients and families at end of life. And we continue to care for patients and families through that period and beyond, and do grief and bereavement care as well.
Yeah. And what are some of the misconceptions about palliative care? Is it the same thing as hospice, or what is different about palliative care?
Thanks for bringing that up. This is often conflated, palliative care and hospice, and they are similar but not the same. So like I alluded to, palliative care encompasses hospice and end-of-life care, but hospice isn't necessarily palliative care. So what that means is that many times we in palliative care come alongside patients and families early in their illness and journey with them through the trajectory of their illness, which includes end-of-life care, but not necessarily. And I find that there are a lot of differences between adult palliative care and pediatric palliative care. And in adult palliative care, we do a bit more end-of-life care than we do in pediatric palliative care. And we certainly value our collaboration with our hospice partners as well.
Yeah, okay. So someone could be in palliative care without necessarily being in hospice, right?
Correct.
So it's not just for people who are close to the end of life. It's also for people just dealing with very complex medical conditions. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. We take care of patients and families anywhere along their disease trajectory. We find the earlier is better. We find that we're able to do more the earlier we're involved in patients' care. In fact, some studies have shown that patients live longer and better with palliative care on board. No, it's not necessarily for end of life.
Yeah, and what I wanted to highlight something you said earlier, because I have a friend who works in pediatric palliative care, and she always says that her contribution is communication. Like you said earlier that you have difficult conversations with families about their family members' care. And that I think is what is at the core, at least from my understanding of the field. Like that seems to be the a critical skill and value that you bring to a person's whole care team. Is that right?
I think so. I hope so. And we do. We talk about hard things. We are the folks that that sit with patients and families and help them understand and talk about their prognosis or what to expect and how to make a medical care plan for that prognosis that sort of values who they are and what they want out of
right.
life for their family. And interestingly, and I think this is something that not a lot of people know, we have these difficult conversations with patients and families, but also with our colleagues. And I think that one of the things that we find a lot in palliative care is that we do a lot of this kind of care coordination and sort of mapping of all mm-hmm. the different pieces of the care team. So mm-hmm. it's us, the patient, the family, the ICU doctor, the primary care doctor, the neurologist, the social worker, the chaplain, and we sort of bring it all together to sort of provide this holistic patient and family centered view to help move things forward.
I think that is such a, in a way, a really beautiful and profound role to play. You know, when I can only imagine as a parent, I never had to face a situation where my child was very, very, very sick. Mm-hmm. But I just, it's every parent's worst nightmare that you have, that something happens with your child and they're very sick or, God forbid they're close to, passing, and dying from this illness. I can't imagine what it is to go through that as a parent. And I know that many people do have to face that. And on this show, we talk about hard things. I can't think of anything harder. And the fact that Texas Children's and other pediatric facilities offer this type of palliative care and offer subject matter experts like you and your colleagues the opportunity to get in there and have that relationship and do that that critical communication, because it is such an incredibly difficult road to walk down. I'm just thankful every day that there's people like you out there helping, you know, families walk down that road, that very, very difficult road. So,
well, that's so kind.
Y'all are my heroes.
Thank you. You know, and it is quite humbling to be in this space with patients and families who are dealing with unimaginable hardships. And just to sort of paint the picture a little bit, you know, we take care of, I think I alluded to before, lots of different ages, babies, children, adolescents, young adults, all the way through adulthood with lots of different kinds of diagnoses. We have children who are suddenly ill with things like cancers of the blood or solid tumor or accidents. But we take care a lot of more chronically ill children too, children with medical complexity, children that have neurologic impairment from prematurity, chronic lung disease, chronic heart disease, things like that. And so it's a really wide spectrum. And we deal with, you know, all levels of psychosocial coping along that spectrum as well. And so sometimes it is very hard, and there are a lot of emotions. And sometimes, you know, sometimes we have relationships with folks that go for a long time, and we're able to find joy and laugh and have happiness in those conversations as well.
Yeah, that's really a beautiful thing. So, Jillian, this is an incredible career path that you've taken. And I've got to think that there's not, this is not necessarily for all doctors. And because it's a much more kind of heart work, inspired work that you do. So what did inspire you to pursue this path? How did you end up here?
Thanks for asking. Yes, I did not grow up thinking I wanted to become a pediatric palliative care doctor. It's sort of the whole life is what happens when you're busy making other plans, kind of thing. But I knew I wanted to go into medicine, I think, from early on. And I was always drawn towards intensity. I was somebody that liked to have conversations that matter. Even as an adolescent, I really always craved sort of physical intensity. And so I always liked intense things. And I was on the track to become a medical missionary. I had done my residency here at Baylor at Texas Children's in internal medicine and pediatrics, which is a dual designation of adult and child medicine, to be a medical missionary and to go travel the world and do something like Doctors Without Borders. And then my dad died. And my dad died an unexpected death. And it was horrible. Mm-hmm. And as I look at the date, I'm reminded, and I think interestingly, this is the anniversary of his passing.
Oh my goodness.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that is so beautiful that we're doing this radio show today.
It really is. It really is. Because I like to say that even in death, he has continued to teach me and guide my way. And he did. His death occurred at the end of my residency, and it left me thinking, gosh, we need to do better in medicine, and we have to do better. And it led me to explore this field, the specialty of palliative care.
Wow. Well, what a blessing. And how profound that it's today is the anniversary of his death, and we're talking, and I'm sure somewhere he is smiling down on you.
I think so.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Wow. Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I would love to hear some more about this incredibly hard and yet significant, important work that you do. But first, let's take a few seconds to talk about how this radio show is coming to you. KPFT takes no advertising dollars at all, and almost every one of the people who work to bring you this show are volunteers. Y'all, they literally work for coffee. Please call 713-526-5738 and press option 1 to become a sustaining member today. Okay, we are back. We are talking with Dr. Jillian Jarrell. We're talking about all the hard things that she has done in her life and the hard things that she does every day as a pediatric palliative care physician. So, Dr. Jarrell, I mean, what you've talked about with us today is so incredibly moving. The work that you do with families and children who are very, very sick and sometimes dying. It's super demanding from an emotional standpoint. So talk to us a little bit about how you balance dealing with that incredibly emotionally demanding work and still being able to find joy in your professional life and outside of it.
Thanks so much. And can I just say that I'm so glad that we live in a day and age where finding joy is part of the vernacular. It's part of the conversation. I'm glad we ask these questions of one another. It's so important. I think about this a lot because it is important to stay balanced and able to do this work. I talk a lot about it with my team as well. And have you read the Book of Joy?
No, I have not.
Can I tell you about this book?
Yes, please do.
It is this really great book that documents a conversation between the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
Oh my goodness. I don't know why I haven't read that.
It's fabulous. I read it within the last decade, and it documents this conversation between these two, amazing human beings, great faith leaders, cultural icons, and it talks about trying to find the meaning of life and joy in each faith tradition. And what they come to at the end of the book is that in either faith tradition, the meaning of it all is to love and serve one another well.
Wow.
That's it.
Wow.
And nothing has rung more true to me than that simple phrase. And it's I found it true in my own life and my own work that I just get such I feel the joy when I'm able to have a hard conversation with a patient or family member and help move their care forward or hear them when others can't, or when my team, my exceptional team, is able to do something magical for them. And it's really this joy of service that is sustaining, I think, beyond all else. I think the other thing I've been thinking about recently is how much in my this mid-career phase that I'm in, that I'm really enjoying mentoring others. We have a large interdisciplinary team here at Texas Children's doing palliative care, and I love working with them. We work with a lot of medical students, residents, fellows. I work with a lot of junior faculty, and help them sort of figure out what their career path is, whether it's pediatric palliative care or something else. And being able to share my story, my successes, my failures, my flubs, with others to ease their journey is it's really something special.
That's amazing. You talk about mentoring, and I think that topic's come up several times in our interviews with women doing hard things and the importance of mentorship. Tell us a little bit more about who mentored you and what did you find? Did you find people along the way who were willing to invest in you, and how are you giving that back?
Sure. Thanks for asking that. So many, and not enough time to give all the credit where credit is due. But one mentor in particular has just been a real godsend. A woman named Joan Bennett was my undergraduate research mentor at Tulane University, where I worked in her microbiology lab. She's actually a world famous microbiologist. She was the president of the American Society for Microbiology. She does all kinds of cool fungal genetic stuff, and I studied kombucha in her lab way before it was cool.
Really?
I did. So I had a mind for sort of integrative, outside of the box stuff, even when I was, 18. And she really taught me about the scientific method. She sort of gave me the space in her lab and was like, "Ask questions, find the answers, make mistakes." And I set more than a few things on fire. And
How old were you when you did that?
I started working in her lab when I was 17, a freshman in college.
Wow.
And I worked in her lab all through undergrad until I graduated. So she taught me about, asking questions and finding answers. But the real beauty in her mentorship is that it is sustained. We are still friends.
Oh.
We just published another paper together on kombucha a couple of years ago, and I named one of my children after her.
Oh my goodness.
And she's just taught me that, you know what, nothing, teaching is great, but loving people is everything. And that's what I
Oh.
try to do with my mentees, is love them.
Yeah. How beautiful. Wow. Makes me want to be one of your
Sure.
mentees. Well, and I think, people come from a lot of different walks of life, and it's sometimes the background that we come from doesn't always prepare us for the life that we're going to live. Can you talk a little bit about your background and where, where you came from and kind of how you got on the road that you're on?
Sure. I am from West Virginia, and I grew up in a very wonderful, loving family. I've already given credit to my sweet dad, and my mom worked very hard to give us a great life. But I was actually the first woman on my mom's side of the family to go to college, much less graduate school. And West Virginia is a place that has and always has had some a lot of problems, and it's sometimes difficult, I think, to move away from those places. And due to my sort of love of intensity and adventure, I was so excited to go away to college and to pursue a highly intellectual, rigorous field. But it hasn't been easy. I haven't known a lot of the rules, I think, in the playbook of life, of intellectualism, of academia. And so I've had to learn those as I go. But I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for where I came from. And especially as I age, I find myself more drawn to my past and my roots, I think, than ever. And I hope to impart that to my own children, a love of family and a love of community and an honoring of what's come before us.
Yeah, that's really great. So beautiful again. In the time that we have left, I'm wondering if you could give a little bit of advice to women who are stepping into hard, emotionally taxing roles. What advice do you have for them? We hear a lot about self-care when you're in an emotionally taxing role. What does that mean for you?
Yeah, thanks. Again, I'm so grateful that we live in an age where things like self-care and boundaries are part of the conversation. They are so important. And in thinking about this, I thought of two things. The first being passion. To do something hard, and especially to do it well, you have to really align with the mission of what it is you're working on or toward or for. And so, like having this personal connection to palliative care has been the driving force behind my career. And so I think that for other women doing hard things, find something you love and love it, and it will love you back. So passion is the first thing. And the second thing, it is self-care. You can't fill up other people's cups unless your own cup is full. And that looks different for different people. I'm super lucky to work on this amazing team here at Texas Children where we know that. And so, we have very discrete times that we see patients, and we have lots of time for other academic endeavors and program development and things like that. So we can sort of refill our intellectual cup, and our time away is our time away. And so I think that's important to sort of structure your work in a way that lets you refill, however that is. And I think boundaries are important. I think it's important to know when to say when and to let 5 o'clock be 5 o'clock, if that's possible, in whatever hard role folks are trying to achieve, and go home and let your cup be filled. My cup fillers are my precious babies, 4 and 7, my very sweet husband. And I have two wonderful stepkids, and I have a cadre of amazing, amazing girlfriends who have just been the loves of my life.
Oh boy, there's nothing like good girlfriends. That is
I tell you.
very much part of my self-care as well. Wonderful. So, do you have any parting words for people out there who are going through a difficult experience. Maybe it is the sickness of a child or the transition of a parent. Maybe it's becoming a caretaker. But do you have any words of wisdom for those people who are in the middle of doing hard things?
Well, I wish I could hug them and hold their hand, or sit with them in silence, as we do on our team. But in lieu of that, I mean, I would just say, take a breath. Sometimes it's not even one day at a time. Sometimes it's 1 hour at a time, 1 minute at a time. And know that there is such beauty and strength, even in the most unimaginable situations, in the darkest moment, there is beauty. You may not be able to see it now, but it's part of your story, and your story is amazing.
Just got chills. So you recommend the Book of Joy. Do you have any other reading recommendations for our listeners?
Oh gosh. Let's see. What else am I reading? I love Brené Brown. I love her
Yes.
all of her quotes. Vulnerability without boundaries isn't vulnerability. Yes, the Book of Joy, and I can't think of any others right now. But I do want to tell you that you are amazing and you do hard things, and I love your show. I love public radio. And I love the shop. I shop there frequently. I think that the cottage shop is just so special and such a gem in Houston. So thank you, Anna.
Oh, thank you. And you know what? I think that's a perfect note to end on. I'm going to remind our listeners that Amplified Houston is supported by that shop, the Cottage Shop, which is a thrift store located at 811 Westheimer in Houston. It's owned and operated by the Women's Home, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Proceeds from the Cottage Shop pay for programs that help women do hard things, like
Yes,
reclaim
girl.
their lives after terrible crises. Proceeds for the Cottage Shop go to fund all of the programs that help them. Further information can be found at thewomenshome.org/thecottageshop. I want to just say such a huge thank you to Dr. Jarrell. This has been an amazing conversation. I can't wait to keep it going. And I just want to really thank you for giving us your heart and soul today. It's been a beautiful interview. Be sure to stay tuned for Gulf Streams with Weston Twardowski for the latest environmental and climate news in the Gulf Coast region and beyond. This is Anna Coffey and Amplified Houston, the Women's Edition, over and out.
It's time now for your good news for a good planet, the bee brick. We all know that bees are pollinating honeymakers that live in colonies within hives. However, about 90% of bee species actually live and work alone.